from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the upcoming Evening with the Stars Ballet.
I'll check out the Indianapolis Arts Center's open house.
And I'll find out what Culturati Kids is up to. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. A year ago, the Indianapolis City Ballet presented one of the most diverse ballet programs with some of the world's best talent to grace a stage in Indianapolis. This year, they're once again raising the ballet bar. Travis DiNicola spoke with founders Jane Fortune and Bob Hess, as well as ICB's executive director Kevin Hess and their director of marketing Ellie Barker about what stars are coming out for this year's performance.
Bob, Jane, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you again. And Kevin and Ellie, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you in our studio today.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I am thrilled about this. I just have to say that last year, Bob, Jane, you came to the studio and you promised one of the best evenings of ballet that I would ever see, which was a pretty, I thought, you know, pretty high standard to start with. And you certainly delivered. So I am just dying to see what you are going to bring to Indianapolis this year. And we'll get to the specific schedule in a moment. But briefly tell me about what exactly is Indianapolis City Ballet, because it's sort of a different type of organization than maybe other dance companies or dance classes. I mean, it's one big night, Evening with the Stars.
Well, it's interesting you ask, and I thank you. We're usually, when you say a ballet company, we're not. We're Indianapolis City Ballet, which is a program bringing the very best of ballet, professional ballet, to the area. Last year, as you know, in September, we brought An Evening with the Stars, which you liked and about 2,000 other people liked too, very much. And we're going to do the same thing September 11th at the Murat Theater at 8 o'clock. And the lineup is terrific. But we do more than that. We also have master classes for the area students. I don't think people know that there are about 60 dance schools in the greater Indianapolis area. So there are a lot of dancers interested in dance and ballet. And we're able to teach about 200 of them in 7 master classes, bringing in the finest teachers in the world. We also did a photography exhibition, which we hope to do again. But someday we'll have a ballet company.
A company, a full-time company. But that's not what it is now. And I just want to be clear about this, because I think it's very unique and interesting that what you're doing is, you know, you're not bringing in a specific company from out of town to, you know, perform at clubs, and that's a great thing. It's a great opportunity to see, you know, specific companies out there. You're actually creating, and Kevin, I believe you're the producer of this year's evening, you're actually creating a unique evening of dance, of bringing together some of the best dancers from the world to Indianapolis, but also making connections with Indianapolis as you're doing it. And right now it's just a once-a-year event, which is we're very fortunate to have.
Yes.
But it is sort of a unique proposition that you've brought together, especially, I mean, Bob and Jane in doing this. I mean, there's not quite anything like this anywhere else, or certainly not here.
Well, and the interesting thing about it is I think that everybody, it's something that seems to be needed. I mean, they're all loving it so much, and they're so grateful to have these opportunities, and it is a it's been very rewarding to us and to the people that, you know, have been with us.
And you're just great fans of dance, I know.
Yes,
so
that's
a great opportunity for you to see some great shows.
That's right.
Kevin, I want to talk about this year's specific program. I recognize that a lot of the dancers are new this year, which is great. The pieces range from a few minutes, about 8 minutes, I believe. It's a big evening. How many pieces in total throughout the evening?
There'll be 13 dancers doing 12 different pieces on the evening's program, and they range from the shortest is about 3.5 minutes, and going to about 8 minutes for the more classical, longer pieces.
And all types of styles. I mean, if you're a student of ballet, I can't think of a better evening where you can see sort of a sampler of all the different types of styles and dancers that are out there.
Right. We're going to run from anything from Don Q, Pas de Deux, to The Flames of Paris, to the most contemporary coming out of Berlin. The artist from Berlin will be doing some stunning contemporary pieces.
I remember, last year there's some really interesting contemporary pieces, I think, out of Germany.
There's a lot of good German, the choreographers in Germany and such. We'll be doing a Forsyth piece on the program this year.
Tell me a bit about the opening piece, actually, it certainly has an Indiana connection with Cole Porter music, and this is new this year. It's a piece that will be a premiere here, right?
It is. It's a world premiere. Bob and Jane have... Through our initial event, met Mag Russell and Steve Russell, and they are descendants of niece. She's the niece of Cole Porter, and so we just started developing this concept, and they've been very supportive, and gone to the Cole Porter Trust, and they've gotten on board to say we'd like to help you make this happen, and so. We've hired Margot Sappington to choreograph for us. We've got two young dancers who will start work next week, actually. They'll do about 3 weeks of work putting together a brand new piece.
And what's the music?
It'd be Night and Day.
Night and Day.
Sung by Ella Fitzgerald.
What a fantastic piece. That's very exciting. That's a whole new element this year as well. And what a great way to kick it off. Two things that I'm just thrilled about that are returning, one specific dancer and one specific piece. I want to mention certainly Julie Kent from the American Ballet Theater you're bringing back. I mean, she's just one of the, if not the most incredible ballet dancers working right now.
The lyrical dancer, the dancer of her generation. I mean... one of the last ones chosen by Baryshnikov to join ABT, and she's been a good friend to us. She's helped us with the Roy Round exhibition. She was here for our first event, and she's the first one to answer the phone when you make a call.
That's
so it's really
a good friend.
She's a very nice lady.
Now, the Roy Round exhibition, that's the exhibition of the photographs. In fact, it was shown at the Heron College of Art and Design earlier this summer, I believe.
It was. We're at the Heron School of Art and Design and running from June till mid-July.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And then the other piece that I wanted to mention that I know a lot of people are going to be thrilled is returning is the piece Caught by the Parsons Dance Company. In fact, the dancer, Miguel Quiñones, is returning. He was the dancer who performed it last year.
He was. He came for a master class then in January, and he's coming back. He loved it. So.
And this is a piece that I think appeals to absolutely everyone, whether you love dance or maybe you're trying to figure out what dance is. All I can say is for the people who have not seen it, you will see a man fly. I think we'll just leave it at that. And for the people who know the piece Caught, it'll be a great opportunity to see it again.
No wires, no trapeze, just one guy on stage all alone flying.
It is. I mean, just even talking about it, I'm getting goosebumps because it is one of the most magical pieces of choreography I've ever seen. Tell me about some of the other highlights for this year.
Well, we're very lucky to have Natalia Osipova and Ivan Vasiliev from the Bolshoi. They joined. They were one of the last of the artists who were able to finally get join the program. And their focus is primarily classical. But they're two dancers at the top of the game in their early 20s and already major international stars. So that was particularly interesting. And Elisa Cabrera and Michal Kaniskin from Berlin, again, bring a very strong contemporary ballet, ultra-contemporary ballet, to the program. So it's both ends of the spectrum with those two couples.
I would have to imagine this is also a pretty incredible experience for the dancers. I mean, last year I was fortunate enough I got to go to sort of the reception afterwards where all the dancers were hanging out, and you could see that they were so excited to have that opportunity to share the stage with each other, to see each other's work. Probably a lot of them maybe had not done that before, and even just to get together and talk. I mean, that was kind of cool for them.
There are a few of them hadn't ever met before, but most of them, they see each other once every 4 or 5 years on a program somewhere. And to get together, and they didn't know what to expect here. They didn't know what Indianapolis would be. They didn't know what the crowd would be. And it was Joaquin Duluth, who was in the first piece by David Hochoy that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And Joaquin said, I hadn't set foot on stage yet. There were two other dancers doing the opening piece. And he said, the energy coming from the audience was infectious. He said, it was electric. I mean, he said, before I stood on stage, I knew we were in for a special evening.
Oh, yeah.
He said it was really the audience that fed the artist. So.
Well, I would imagine this year, as you've been working with getting both returning and new artists to come, that sort of word of mouth has been like, oh, this is a great night to do. I mean,
we had people in Moscow saying, well, this is your third event in Indianapolis. Said, I didn't know you knew about the first, but this is the second.
Wow. That's great.
So, yeah, there's a great word of mouth among the dance community, among dancers and such, that this is a really high-quality event with a great audience.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Ellie, I want to ask you about sort of, because I know there's lots of different options for people to attend the event, and we want to get lots of people there because it's such an amazing opportunity. It's at the Murat Theater again, correct?
It will be at the Murat Theater on Saturday, September 11th at 8 p.m. We have patron seats that would be available starting at $250, and you can go on to our website, www.indianapoliscityballet.org, and buy patron tickets. Tickets, regular seating would be through the Murat box office. And then if you have a group of 10 or more, are offering a little bit better than a 15% discount.
Okay.
So the group discount will really be a benefit for
I remember last year it seemed like the balcony was just filled with young girls. I mean, obviously, you know, ballet dancers, you know, 8 years old to 18 years old and everything in between. It seemed like a lot of schools had brought their students there, and that was such a great thing to see, you know, all these young students and some guys too, you know, that were sort of, you know, seeing the future.
Absolutely. The dance students are the audience of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they go on to become professional dancers or not, they're going to be our audience that we want to cultivate. And we had about 400 students last year.
Wow.
And they absolutely set the tone for the evening. And I expect that we'll have probably closer to 700 students this year.
Yeah, they did set the tone, and which I thought was great. I mean, it was one of the most energetic audiences that I can remember, you know, attending a dance performance as well. I mean, everyone just seems so excited.
Absolutely. And we started the masterclass series then with Miguel, and it was no problem at all to sell that class out to anybody who was at the performance, that's for sure.
Well, let me ask you, Bob and Jane, what's next? What are your next plans? You've had a successful year and about to have another great evening with the Stars. Where do we go next?
Well, we'll continue probably with the evening with the Stars and maybe expand on it a little bit. We're trying to devise something to celebrate what's known in the world as International Dance Day in April, and we'd like to celebrate that. Someday, soon, we'd like to have a company. I think what's important is that we're trying to build an audience for the future. And there were so many friends of ours, men, who were, as they say in Indiana, drugged to the event. They really didn't want to be there. And by intermission, and we call it halftime, right?
Well, it is Indiana.
by intermission time, they came over to me and said, this is fantastic. I'll come anytime you do anything like this.
Yeah.
I think that's very promising.
I think something else, too, which was rather interesting, Terry Hennessy, you know, who heads the Murat, said that our group made more noise than any rock group he'd had in there. And he said, I can't believe it. It's ballet.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis City Ballet's founders, Jane Fortune and Bob Hess, as well as ICB's executive director, Kevin Hess, and their director of marketing, Ellie Barker. An Evening with the Stars 2010 takes place on September 11th at the Murat Theater. The ICB is also offering a number of master classes this year as well. For more information about the performance and classes, please visit IndianapolisCityBallet.org. Just like it sounds, IndianapolisCityBallet.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
On Friday, September 10th, the Indianapolis Arts Center will host its annual open house from 6 to 8 p.m., and visitors will have the chance to see demonstrations or hands-on art activities in every studio. They can shop at the Seal gift shop, sidewalk sale, buy a student-made bowl, and get it filled with chili to benefit the Arts Center's programs, sample food from Qdoba and Broad Ripple Ice Cream Station, and as if that isn't enough, they can see exhibits of works by faculty and by award-winning student artists, including Lisa Van Meter, Alice Lee, Shelby Birch, and Marty Friedman. Marty was the overall winner of the Indianapolis Arts Center's 2009 student show, and Sharon invited him to leave the studio just long enough to talk with her about how he got started in ceramics and why he thought the "You Have Won an Award" letter might be a mistake.
All right, I have to ask how you got involved in ceramics and what drew you to the Indianapolis Arts Center. Were those two? Did those two things happen at the same time?
No, they happened several years apart, actually. I got interested in ceramics at the Chautauqua Institution in Western New York State.
I was just there.
Were you?
Amazing place.
Well, we've been going every year for 19 years. We were introduced to it by friends from Cleveland. And for the first several years, I had nothing to do with anything artistic. In fact, I grew up with no training or interest or inclination towards visual arts, and it wasn't in my family background. It wasn't in my education. When I went to high school, I was in a engineering and science high school where you couldn't take an art or music class even if you wanted to. But no self-respecting engineering student would want to do that anyway. And so I went through early middle age with really no inkling at all that this would ever be of any interest to me.
Wow, what changed?
Well, the way I look back on it, it was the ambiance of Chautauqua. Perhaps I should say, Chautauqua, at least as far as I understand it, is the place where the concept of continuing education for adults was invented in the United States in the late 1800s. And the spirit there is 9 months out of the year when it's out of season, it's a sleepy small town in southwestern New York State. The other 3 months of the year, it's an incredible place with a full summer of arts, education, religious things, lectures. They have their own full symphony orchestra. They have their own theater. They have their own opera. They have more than you could possibly imagine. And most people will come for a week or two. And we'll, rent a place on the grounds. And the concept is, take a class and try something out. And so in that spirit, the first few years that I went, I would take a class in something that I thought I might be interested in that I didn't really know much about. And 1 year I took a class in stamp collecting.
Mm-hmm.
1 year I took a class in astronomy, where we would go out at night and look through somebody's telescope and things. But as the place is big enough that it takes a few visits to kind of really know what's there. And it took me a few years to find my way to the art quadrangle. And my wife and I are fortunate to have friends who are artistically oriented. And as I found myself kind of interested in going there and just kind of feeling what it was like, they were sort of encouraging me to, see if there's anything there that might interest you. And, that's where the 7-year-old boy who knew that he could never draw any more than stick figures and hated the idea and wanted to just go outside and play, that would kick in pretty strong.
Mm.
But I think the welcoming atmosphere there is really what made me kind of start hanging out. I don't remember how many years it took. It took a few years, and I finally screwed up my courage and signed up for one of those week-long introduction to ceramics classes, because they have people in several of the visual arts, primarily painting, drawing, watercolor, but also ceramics, sculpture, and I'm probably forgetting a few. They have faculty people who the other 9 months of the year might be faculty at this or that university or college, mm-hmm. and they'll come to Chautauqua for the summer to be teachers, and they will typically have scholarship students there for the summer. Depending on what we're talking about, it might be graduate school age, early 20s. In the case of the music, it can be younger than that, and there's ballet also. Mm-hmm. So there's all this formal training going on for young people, but then those same faculty might also teach these week-long classes for adults that are intended to be introduction to this or that. And so I joined one of those, and there's a man named Jeff Greenham who teaches in West Virginia who was just the right person for me to feel comfortable and to get my hands on things.
How did he do that? Was it something in, did he just say you can't do anything wrong, just try things?
Well, first of all, you can actually wander by under the guise of just wandering around and actually eavesdrop pretty well on what's going on just because of the physical layout. It's a little hard to describe. And I already had a sense of his personality and his style, and he, you know, a very modest, unassuming person who has valuable things to teach, but has some understanding of how to approach adults who may have, you know, the urge, but, you know, an equally strong desire to, you know, not embarrass themselves,
sure.
or to censor themselves or whatever. And I think it was his style and his approach that really, you know, made me feel like I want to do this. And I see it now in the classes that I take at the Indianapolis Arts Center, in some of the first-time students who might be in a class with me. Some of the teachers prefer to have, you know, all beginners or all intermediate or all advanced. My current teacher, Tim Ryan, is fond of having students across all levels, and I kind of like that too. And one of the things that I see is some people who have a version of that going on, and I think the secret to it is, if you have a strong enough urge or desire to do something that maybe you can't even put into words, it helps you to overcome, you know, fear of embarrassment or fear of failure or the kinds of things that might hold people back, fear of imperfection. There's probably a long list of things that can affect people. And I think that if there's something inside of yourself that propels you forward, you keep coming back. So it was largely that. I think also the medium itself somehow seemed less intimidating because at some level it's playing in mud. So, you know, you're kind of getting your hands all gushy and it doesn't feel like you can do wrong things.
Yeah, permission to get dirty.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the first time you actually put your hands in that stuff? How did it feel? Did it surprise you? Did it make you feel like you were a little kid again?
I don't know that it did. It's hard for me to honestly say that I remember that first day and that first time. I think you get distracted more by the oddity if you're trying to work on a wheel mm-hmm. for the first time. The oddity of what the heck is going on as you try to follow those first simple basic directions to cause this lump of clay to behave well enough so that you can get it centered on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and the sensation of using water and having this muddy stuff run through your hands, is a strange kind of an experience. And I think that's probably what most people will notice or remember at first.
Is there a part of your engineering and scientific brain or being that comes into play when you're in your studio?
Well, I think that's true, not just of me, but again, other adult students at the Art Center. You know, we don't spend a lot of time. We spend very little time. I'll even say we spend almost no time talking to each other mm-hmm. about what we do for a living.
Hmm. You're somebody different there.
And to this day, there are people that I may have been in classes with off and on for several years, and we don't have a clue what kind of work each other does.
Hmm.
Because that's not why we're there. But
it's
I
irrelevant.
Do know that there are people who are architects, engineers, physicians, scientists, people who probably make their living on whatever side of the brain that's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I see all of us using some of that. For me, it's some tendency to try to construct shapes and forms a certain way. At first, I think, if anything, it was maybe an impediment, although I didn't experience it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I came to look at it a little differently as a couple of years went by. Because, you know, when you're first trying to master those basic skills, it's really important to you to get a piece pretty well centered and make a nice little dish or bowl or cup. And, you know, everybody tends to make the same kinds of things. They look a lot alike at the
sure.
beginning because everyone's learning from ground zero. And we all joke, you know, once you've advanced a little bit, that we've all made our share of doorstops, objects of that type. I, in fact, have kept at least one from my first year, which I think was 1998, at Chautauqua. It's functional enough that I can keep paper clips in my my desk, but it's I'm also fond of it because my son, who was young at the time, helped me glaze the piece before we fired it. So I think we all make, you know, doorstops and, you know, heavy objects at first. And then gradually, as time goes by, you evolve some style of your own.
Yeah, how does that happen?
It's a mystery. But I know it happens because the way you can see it, not just to yourself, but, you know, the process is such that you make a piece, you form it when it's wet, you take it off the wheel, it begins to dry, you trim it. It goes through a first firing to stabilize the clay. It's called a bisque firing, B-I-S-Q-U-E. I don't know where the term comes from or why it's called that. And then at that point, the piece is ready to glaze, to put we think of it as color, but it's almost like molten glass as well as color. And when the pieces are ready to be out of the bisque kiln and ready to be glazed, they're all put together in kind of on a holding shelf. So if you come in and you look, it gets to the point where you recognize the work of people who are intermediate or advanced students, because people have a definite style that they evolve to or they're interested in. And I guess it's a combination of whatever's inside of yourself that you can't put into words. And then also, in some cases, people are very interested in doing certain things, and so they deliberately make the same sort of thing over and over again. Some people, you know, become professional. They sell their work. They may want to be able to efficiently make a lot of things that are all about the same size and shape. But other times it's people who are just, you know, I was in a couple months ago, and there's a guy named Don in one of my classes. And we don't really know each other. We say hello. We take classes together. We don't have a clue what kind of work each other does. One day I went in on the weekend. You can go in and, to do open studio time if you're registered for a class. And I saw some pieces out on in a active work area, like someone was there, but the person wasn't around. I looked at it. I knew Don was there. And 10 minutes later, you know, in
there
he walked.
Was.
Because those are his piece. That's his work. And it's very, there's a lot of that that goes on. It's very interesting.
You had the honor of being the overall winner of the 2009 student show, which is why you have the solo exhibit at the open house, right?
That's right.
Are you scared at all? Are you worried about a bunch of people suddenly coming in and talking to you about your work?
I've gone through some different phases about this.
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Well, I try to keep a sense of humor about things in general. So when it first occurred, We found out about every year the Art Center has an annual student show, a juried show. They have a couple of outside judges come in, and they jury all the work of all students in all media at all levels. Perhaps this is a common thing that occurs in art centers everywhere. Since I have no academic background or, you know, training in this, I discover things that other people knew a long time ago. And so what they'll do at the Art Center is they'll take all the beginner's work that was submitted, whether it was painting or ceramics or you name it, and they'll put it in one room, and the judges will go through and do whatever they do to decide which of those pieces deserve to be included in the show. So I've been through that process for a few years because I started entering probably 2 or 3 years after I came here. I've had a couple of nice little honorable mention, you know, awards over the years and that sort of thing. But this time, I had no idea that this was if you're on tap to get any kind of an award, you get a little teaser letter in the mail.
Oh.
And it's kind of like you may have won a major award. You know? If you remember the movie A Christmas Story and Darren McGavin, who got the lamp with the lamp.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it makes me think of that. So they ask you to show up, but they don't tell you ahead of time what it is. And, you know, it's nice. And they have awards for kids also and adults. So I got one of those letters again this time. It looked like the ones I'd gotten in previous years. And it was only when we got to the very end of the whole ceremony that I hadn't gotten anything. And
you thought, wait, did they do a mail merge mistake?
Yeah, that was the first thought. Then, you know, they announced, you know, this Best of Show award, which incidentally, I'm honored to have it. I appreciate, you know, the honor. I don't discount it, but I myself thought there were several other things that were more deserving. So I think a lot of it is subjective judge. You know, it's subjective aesthetic. It's like judging figure skating maybe or something like that. So then they gave me this award and I was probably in a state of shock for a day or two. And then I spent about a week waiting for the embarrassed phone call from someone at the Art Center explaining that they really mixed it up and it was somebody else's award. And then, you know, that went away. So then I started getting a little bit nervous. But, you know, I think they go through this every year with people like me who, you know, may not be expecting this. Because basically the award is you have 6 months from getting it, or 8 months later, you're going to have this solo show in this room, this formal gallery, which all of a sudden starts looking very, very large and imposing. And so Patrick Flaherty, who's the exhibitions manager, offered to come out and take a look at my work to see, you know, what I had so far and how many pieces I might need and so forth. And Patrick said, I'll come out to your studio. I said, I don't have a studio. Come to my house. So he came out and looked around. And he basically reassured me, saying he thought that I had enough pieces to do a show already. And so I'd be better off just working at my usual pace, doing whatever I do for the first 6 months of calendar year 2010.
That had to have been a relief.
Yeah, because especially because as my student and teacher colleagues know, I go at a snail's pace, and in fact, I'm the subject of some jokes and humor about how slow and, you know, deliberate or whatever, patient.
And here's the reward.
Yeah, I think so. So Patrick reassured me, and then a week later, my teacher Tim Ryan came out and said the same thing, and so that helped. So probably in the 6 or 8 months leading up to this, I might have made 10 or 12 pieces, and I might have used about 8 of them in the show. I was trying to make things right up to the very end, including we were at Chautauqua this year, just a week or two before I had to deliver the pieces to the show, and I had something that I was pretty happy with, but then it didn't work in the final firing, and the glazed result didn't work. So that was one that didn't quite work. I had another one that Tim was helping me attach something complicated in the way of a handle. Piece worked, but the handle separated a little bit at the end. So, you know, things like that happen, and you just have to be ready, for whatever comes your way. But to circle back to what you had asked before, I think one of the things that changed for me for the better was when I stopped worrying about making things absolutely perfect and started going with what I probably would, at least I would use, I would, in the past I would call the accidents. Sometimes it would be knocking a piece off the wheel accidentally, or some variation of an accident which might put a dent or a misshapen spot. And I don't know exactly when it happened, but 2, 3, 4 years ago, those started becoming opportunities. And so, you know, if you had a chance to go over to the Art Center, you'll see part of the work that I have on display. A fair number of the pieces have a hole through the middle of them. If you just kind of keep meandering, interesting things sometimes happen.
Sharon Gamble with ceramicist Marty Friedman, the overall winner of the Indianapolis Art Center's 2009 student show. You can see Marty's work in the Sarah Hurt Gallery during the Indianapolis Art Center's 2010 open house on Friday, September 10th from 6 to 8 p.m. Actually, you can see it now, and it's on display through October 3rd. If you go to the open house, be sure to look for student and faculty work on exhibit throughout the building and visit all the studios. There's something to see or do in each one. For more information, visit indplsartcenter.org. That's indplsartcenter.org. Indiblis, or something like that, artcenter.org, or just Google it.
Hey, Travis, you know what this weekend is?
What, Sharon?
It's the last weekend of August.
Oh, goodness, how did that happen?
I know. It's not officially the end of summer, but it might as well be. But we have some neat things you can do to go out and celebrate the end of August on our calendar that we call What'll We Do?
Absolutely. I'm thinking about, are you ready for this one?
I'm always ready.
Slovenian Festival.
I love that. I've been.
It's September 5th.
Awesome.
It's so cool. It's at the it's at the Slovenian National Home Picnic Grounds, and this is actually in Avon, and it takes place on September 5th. You can plan for next weekend. Gates open at 10 with a mass at noon, and there's food and beer and music and more food, and it sounds like a great time.
You know, and I've forgotten how to say a toast.
You know, I bet if you go to
useful.
SloveniaNationalHomeIndy.org, or just maybe Google, like, Indian Slovenia, you'll find the information.
There you go. Fantastic. Hey, all you need is love. You need to twist and shout. It's been a hard day's night. Well, you know where I'm going with this.
Is back in the USSR?
If you're listening on Friday night, you're going to have to plan for Saturday night for this one. It's the Classical Mystery Tour Music of the Beatles. This is part of the Symphony on the Prairies concert series. Friday night at 8. If you're hearing us on Friday night, it's too late. But Saturday night as well. Well, not really at 8, kind of at sundown. Go out early. Go to IndianapolisSymphony.org and find out about tailgating on the prairie. And just check it out.
Yeah.
Lots of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Good weekend for theater. Of course, it's the last weekend of Indie Fringe Festival. There's still a ton going on every night, every day. Theater's all up and down Mass Avenue. And you know what? I'm just going to say it's too hard to pick a favorite. Just go down and see something. You know, each show's only, what, an hour or less, and $10. You can't go wrong. Try out a couple and enjoy the Fringe this weekend.
Absolutely. Something going on in visual arts. This is the Heron Faculty Exhibition, and that is a cool way to see some of the widely varied artwork designed and created by tenured and tenure-track faculty, lecturers, technicians, and adjunct faculty, all combining with furniture, printmaking, painting, drawing, photography, installation, and, as they say, much, much more. That's all going on at Heron School of Art and Design through September 9th.
That should be a really interesting show.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, while you're down checking out stuff at the Fringe, you might want to also consider dropping by the Phoenix Theater. One of their stages is a Fringe stage, but they've also got Pure Prine, the music of John Prine. They've brought this back. It's a creation by Phoenix director Brian Fonseca, and it features the music of John Prine with actors who are also musicians. There really isn't much of a story other than the story in each one of the songs, and if you're a big John Prine fan, you'll know what that means, and you'll love this and enjoy it. So go check it out. It's back, and it runs through September 12th.
And just when you think the summer festivals might be over, don't worry. Flip your calendar over to September and mark Saturday the 25th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you've lived in Indy for a while, you've probably seen that bumper sticker that says, Rocky Ripple, I'm not lost, I live here.
Love it.
You, too, have a chance to figure out where Rocky Ripple is, because they're having the Rocky Ripple Art Festival featuring everything from kids' activities to 50 artists and artisans, bicycle mechanics on hand to offer light fall tune-ups to your bike, rescue dogs, and, as they say, much, much more. Also, Broad Ripple Brew Pub will be pouring microbrews and small producer wines.
Mm. There you go.
September 25th, 11 to 6.
Hey, not too early to start thinking about this year's Jazz Fest. New location, one day only, Saturday, September 18th, Optimus Park, which is the park that's right across from the Indianapolis Arts Center. And it starts at 11 a.m. and it goes all day. Tons of great musicians, including the Charmaine Neville Band from the Neville Brothers, the Mike Stern Band, all types of other great, both local and national musicians are going to be playing that day. Can't wait. It's going to be a ton of fun. Al Jarreau, you know, and
Mel
G.
Wow, lots and lots of fun. Hey, speaking of jazz and other kinds of music, we'll remind you of this next week, but we're going to be broadcasting at the Penrod Arts Fair, and
right,
we're going to be next to the blues stage, so we encourage you, if you're making plans to go, and that's coming up a couple of Saturdays from now, make sure you swing by and say hey.
That's right, Penrod on September 11th. We'll see you there. And we'll be back, Sharon, next
week.
Easy for me to say. Next week with more of that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Culturati Kids is a national nonprofit organization that provides public schools with funding for books, writing workshops, author visits, and innovative programs designed to inspire kids to write. Its work is supported through the sales of children's books they publish, which celebrate cultural and social diversity. Travis DiNicola spoke with Executive Director Erica Roman St. Pierre about Culturati Kids.
Tell me more about what Culturati Kids is, because I like the combination of helping kids read and write and getting books in their hands and
right.
All types of other stuff, too.
Right. We started out as a publishing company called mm-hmm. Culturati, Inc., and that was formed several years ago, and all of our books are focused on some type of culture and diversity, not just racial diversity, but you know, different family situations, things like that, just to kind of give kids pride about their circumstances. So the first thing that we did was form Culturati Kids, and we've got kind of two goals. One is to promote that culture and diversity in the school systems, in low-income families, in foster care agencies. So we want to really work to put books with a diverse background in the hands of these kids who might not necessarily get them.
Sure.
And the other piece of that is to inspire kids to write. Reading is great. We, you know, really behind that. But also being able to write, express yourself effectively, you know, in the written word, it's just so important. And a lot of times that gets overlooked. A lot of times kids think of reading and writing, that's not cool anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to have different ways to get kids excited about reading and writing again, and think of it as cool. So one thing Culturati Kids does is we give funding to teachers or school librarians who come up with great ideas that get kids excited, innovative ideas, as opposed to just, you know, sitting in a classroom with a chalkboard and giving out a writing assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Writing could be fun, it could be cool, and it could be something that, you know, kids can do for a living. So we wanted to just really get that idea across.
What age group are we looking at here in terms of the kids you work with?
Or K through 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so all age groups,
all types
of writing. Certainly kids, you know, in first, second, third grade can write stories.
Can write stories.
Yeah.
And also, I think sometimes different career choices are kind of mapped out for you very well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be a creative writer, the path is not always so defined.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to get that into kids' mindsets. And that really sometimes comes from the teachers and, you know, the parents. But showing them that you can write and make that your life.
And you work with kids, I mean, certainly in central Indiana, but
mm-hmm.
Also it's beyond that, correct?
It's beyond that. We're Indianapolis-based,
mm-hmm.
but we support every school in the nation. So a teacher from California can submit a wish list saying, hey, I need 20 copies of classic novels for my classroom, or, you know, they can be anywhere, as long as it's a request for, again, it could be an author visit, for books for their classroom.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, I mean, what's sort of like a typical request you get from teachers that you guys are able to fulfill? I mean, so, you know, classic books would be one.
Classic books, poetry, mostly so far it's just been books.
Mm-hmm.
But we really, really want to kind of get teachers to come up with different ideas for writing, like we said, to inspire kids. So those are the types of things that we really, really are excited about funding. Lots of times teachers have to come out of their pocket for, mm-hmm. you know, books or, you know, for whatever program they want to start. And want to kind of take that away, you know, hopefully provide the funding so they can concentrate on just being great teachers and inspirational. And then again, author visits. They might want, let's say, you know, for my book, Hoppus Big Move, they might want to have an author come and visit, but it's not in the budget. We'll take care of the charges for that. They can submit a wish list. And again, they can be anywhere. It could be any author, as long as the budget, you know, mm-hmm. they got the budget for it. But yeah, it's a very good program. We're pretty proud of it.
Now, how do teachers find out about this? I mean, is this...
You know, word of mouth is pretty incredible. We do get a lot of visits to our website. We're relatively new. Just been working with Culturati Kids about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, so not a lot of people know that we're out there and that we're here and what we kind of and what we fund. But mostly word of mouth. You know, one teacher tells another teacher or a parent, you know, finds out about it. We have all of the information on each one of our children's books. So if someone buys the book, then they'll see the information on the back.
And this is the primary way that you actually raise the money to fund these programs.
Exactly.
It's through the publishing of the Culturati Kids book. And it's what, like, you, if a parent buys a book, essentially they're buying one book for themselves, but also they're helping to purchase another book for a school? Or,
exactly.
Or is that kind of the way it works?
Yeah, exactly. We are primarily funded by the sale of our books.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got what we call a buy one, get one pledge.
Okay.
So if you buy a book by Culturati Inc., then we automatically... we'll donate another copy to a child in foster care, a school that's struggling that doesn't really have the budget for the acquisition of new books. So anytime you buy a book from us, automatically one's going to be donated. And you can also designate, hey, I'm buying this book, and I want this book to be donated to this organization or to this school, this foster care agency, and we'll do that.
And how do people find your books? I mean, are they available at bookstores, online? I mean, you do sales and events and things yourselves?
Yep, they're available nationwide at all bookstores, mm-hmm. online, but primarily through our website.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of trade shows and things like that. People can find them that way. But, primarily online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your book, Hoppus Big Move. Is that, like, a good example of sort of the type of books you guys publish and work with?
It is. Again, all of our books, especially the children's books, mm-hmm. are about some type of culture and diversity.
Yeah.
So I wrote Hoppus Big Move last year. It was based on my experience growing up in Indianapolis and mm-hmm. then moving to a small town, which I'm not going to name.
Okay.
Being one of very few African-Americans in the school and just, you know, kind of that fitting in there.
Yeah.
And then moving to a town called West Bloomfield, Michigan, which was incredibly diverse. There were all different types of people there. So kind of my experience, you know, my eyes being open to, wow, there's all kinds of different people here mm-hmm. and we're all different and it's great. So you published Hoppa's Big Move, and
so Hoppa's a character in the book.
Hoppa was my nickname growing up.
Hoppa was your nickname,
yeah.
Right? Okay, and then Hoppa, it sounds like she makes some moves through some different places.
She makes some moves and ends up in a good place.
Yeah.
So it kind of takes, you know, readers along that journey, and hopefully opens up some dialogue about being diverse and celebrating differences, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we're all different, and it's okay.
Yeah, and again, but you said that the celebration of diversity goes beyond just race as well. It's also family situations, living situations, and all types of things
that
kids experience.
Yeah, not everyone celebrates Christmas. Everyone mm-hmm. has completely different backgrounds. And all these kids are coming to classrooms, and they're all together.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of hiding our differences, we should, you know, celebrate them, put them out there, explore each other in our backgrounds.
So, you know, I mean, you're encouraging kids to do this both through reading and through writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned earlier that the career path for someone who's a creative writer may not be obvious. Now, certainly not, you know, all the kids participating are going to, you know, grow up to be creative writers.
Right.
But tell me about the benefits that you see in terms of that process of creative writing for kids, you know, whether that's a career choice or not.
Well, I think it's just so, it just feels good to be able to write. It's very therapeutic. And then just the better writer that you become, I mean, the better jobs that you can get possibly down the line, the better you can do in college, in school. It's just really important to be able to write and to write well. And it's just
to think well.
And
to
think well.
Clearly and specifically.
Right. And to get your thoughts out
yeah.
and express those with other people. and then seeing people's reaction to those, you know, maybe mm-hmm. emotional or whatever, or opening the dialogue, getting conversation started. It's great, and it's kind of powerful. So I think it's good for kids to get that and to get mm-hmm. that early, if they don't want to be a writer, but just those communication skills are great.
Now, you guys have some events coming up, is that right, in September?
We do. We're going to be at the Hamilton North Public Library September 11th from 5 to 11, and that's an event that's called Jazz Under the Stars. It's going to be several local jazz musicians who have donated their time to come out and perform for us.
I know Barbara Randell, who's on your staff also, she's also a jazz musician as well.
Yes, she is.
It's a nice tie-in, I'm sure.
Nice tie-in. Mm-hmm. So she'll be there. She's also written a book called Jacob Daddy, and all the proceeds from her book go to benefit Culturati Kids as well. But Jazz and the Stars will be, like I said, September 11th. And then outside the concert, we'll have several different educational activities and information out there that's, you know, from Indianapolis mm-hmm. promoting literacy and diversity.
Excellent, excellent. Of course, people can get more information on your website, culturatikids.net,
yes.
About all that. So what's next for Culturati?
You know, we're going to be publishing more children's books.
Yeah.
All of our books now are being translated into Spanish.
Great.
To start, and then hopefully after that, French and Japanese, maybe. Again, just that theme of broadening horizons. And there's other kids in other countries who would, you know, love to hear these stories
mm-hmm.
And appreciate seeing, you know, what American kids go through.
How do authors find you, or do you find them, or how does that work?
They primarily find us. I'm not mm-hmm. really sure how, probably just from our website.
Yeah.
But again, whatever thing that we publish, it's again about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We always need authors to volunteer for author visits and to kind of mm-hmm. help us talk to kids, do workshops. So that's a good point to bring up.
Oh, good. Excellent. Well, Erica, I want to thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter today. It's been great chatting with you and finding out more about Culturati Kids.
I appreciate it. It was fun. Thanks.
Travis DiNicola with Culturati Kids Executive Director Erica Roman St. Pierre. You can get more information about them at culturatikids.net. That's CulturatiKids.net. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. Matt Sosi joins us for a special interview with musician Tad Robinson.
I'll chat with the Humanities Council's Kira Amstutz about food for thought.
And speaking of food, I get a preview of this year's Greek Fest.
Yum.
Plus, there's our arts calendar recall.
What'll we do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.